when I went to California that in 1950, you know, where this priest in Memphis had been saying, we don't mix, we don't mix. And I go out there in California and they're mixing. Mm-hmm. And a little bit later on, and then all these people are having such a fit about the possibility of intermarriage, through the League of Women Voters, I got involved in this international visitor program and that Organization of American States program, where Tennessee was paired with Venezuela. So I helped organize a group. We went down to Venezuela, and I kept a boy from there for the summer, and the lady down there kept my boy for the summer 1 year. Well, you know, I had seen the people in Venezuela. They were half black and half white all over the place. Everybody had a mixture. It was the odd ones that were not mixed.
Yeah.
And then I come home again, you know, and they're still saying we can't mix. It just... And I don't know why everybody doesn't see what I see, but they don't see what I see. And my sister finally did. My two brothers never did. So I don't know if it's a, I don't know, but it creates an awful lot of trouble in a community where you've got these two dedicated factions that think they have to stop it, you know, prevent it. I argued with a man one day. I said he was against blacks using the restaurants. Mm-hmm. And I said, he said, they don't have a right in the restaurant. I said, well, I have a good friend who's black. And if she and I want to go to lunch one day, we have a right to go to lunch wherever we want to go to lunch. No, you don't. Well, you know, they weren't logical.
Yeah. Did you see, as a result of, like, Candace's of Sugarman and other blacks running for office, any change in any of your white acquaintances at all? Or did they pretty much stay the same in terms of...
They stayed the same. They stayed the same.
Yeah.
Those of us who were open-minded on the subject, and I'll call myself open-minded, progressive, I think we're the ones who know what, you know, the real values in the world, and they don't, but,
yeah.
You know, they just never changed,
yeah.
and they still haven't changed. They're still, you know, now it's not as bad today as it was. There are more whites who... I've noticed it here in the neighborhood association. There's a few black families. There are quite a few moving in from the very south end of this neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of whites have moved away, but there are a lot of whites staying.
Mm-hmm. You know, you talked about how you worked on Orgill's campaign. What sort of work did you do, and what sort of work did women do in campaign or campaigns during that time?
Well, of course, I never did know the head of the campaign. Those were, you know, lawyers and other prominent men in Orgill's campaign. The ladies that I knew, you know, we answered the phone in the office and we stuffed envelopes and, you know, we did that kind of thing. Then we'd go out and... hand out literature.
Mm-hmm.
But there were a few women who were excuse me, Frances Cole.
Mm-hmm.
You've heard of her?
Yeah.
Well, she was a She was in the group that was among the leadership. I was not among the leadership when in those days. Mm-hmm. And Frances Cole was, so she had a more prominent role in those political campaigns than I did, because she was, you know, she was educated for it, and she was, her family was involved in more things. Mm-hmm. I think here in the South, a lot depends on who your family is and what they do, you know, and you get in on their reputation or their status. Mm-hmm. My family didn't have any status. They were just plain, poor, working folks, and they had never gotten involved in politics. They never failed to vote, though, they knew their civic duty. My mother would sweep the driveway and then go out there and sweep the gutter. You know, she was a believer in keeping your property clean, which you don't see all the time today.
What was the role of civic clubs in terms of local campaigns? I saw that a lot of candidates for office made appearances at civic clubs.
Well, that goes back to Mr. Crump's days. Crump organized the whole city that way, because we had all the Italians lived in one neighborhood, and the Jews lived in another neighborhood, and the Irish lived in another neighborhood. So they each had a civic club. Mm-hmm. And Mr. Crump would pick one from each one of those groups to be on his leadership committee. And so it was funny, Memphis was more nearly integrated from the beginning because of Mr. Crump. And they had a Catholic commissioner and a Jewish commissioner, and he spread it all around. And then he had black people organized in Memphis too, doing prominent things, but they didn't overlap. So, have I gotten away from your question?
No.
So, the civic clubs had the responsibility of teaching citizenship and being responsible to the city of Memphis and to the neighbors. If there was a pothole in the street, it was the civic club's duty to call downtown and tell them about a pothole that needed to be fixed. And the schools, if there was a problem in the schools, the civic club leadership did their duty by keeping the city hall informed, and then the work crews went right out and fixed whatever was the problem. So they moved up, the leadership moved up the ranks in the civic clubs, and frequently then they became one of Mr. Crump's crowd, or they ran for office themselves. It was a leadership training program going on, and they were divided on ward and precinct boundaries. And the white community, they called them civic clubs, and in the black community, they called them by their name, the 29th precinct or something club.
Yeah.
Or they called them the City Beautiful Club. But they were involved in the very same thing the white people were doing, which was trying to make Memphis clean and beautiful. And because they were very embarrassed by the reputation they got when somebody came through town and wrote in a New York paper that Memphis was a dirty river town. Well, they were mortified about that. So all the focus was to clean it up and make it beautiful. They worked very hard at it.
What you mentioned, you talked about how the League of Women Voters focused on issues. What sort of activities did the League of Women Voters do?
We have a study group meets once a month. Now there's a night group and a day group. And the program is adopted every year at the annual meeting, what the studies are going to be about. They'll study schools, or I got to do something here. The league's program is local, state, and national. Then they have an international study program. So we study a local issue, state issue, and a national issue. And we get good literature from the National League Office for the national issues. Local issues, like Francis Coe was a league member. We studied school issues, local school issues. And on the state level, we studied issues about children. We studied the reapportionment of the legislature. So they study them in the study groups, and then as soon as they think they're ready, they take consensus. Mm-hmm. And then they publish, you know, they try to get a newspaper article says the league supports thus and so.
Okay.
We did that all the time. So that way we learned to be interested in a local issue and a state issue and a national issue and an international issue, and learn the subject rather than the politics. I think it's one of the best things around is the League of Women Voters.
I watch my time a little because my friend has to pick me up at 3:30. So I think I want to see if I have any other questions. But is there anything else that we haven't talked about that relate to our conversation that you can think about or would like to add?
My head is as jumbled up as this room is. It's cluttered.
Oh. Do you remember anything about the Unity Ticket or the Dedicated Citizens Committee that was involved with the 59 campaign?
Well, was that Argyle's group?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was in one of those groups. The Unity Ticket supported consolidation, did it?
Yeah.
I worked on that. And, you know, I don't know what we did exactly, because a group of professionals wrote up the position paper on it. And I believed it was a good thing, so I got involved in that group. It was always a good government kind of group going on, and usually the Argyle crowd was anti-Crump.
Yeah.
So they were the ones always having the good government groups going.
Sure.
Because the Crump group wasn't the good government group.
Right.
Well, you know, I know some people now, I didn't know them back then, who were longtime Crump supporters. You know, and they thought of themselves as being good, honest, hardworking people, too.
Yeah.
So, more and more, I think, you know, they're just automatically factions, and neither will see the other side, just like how polarized we are today. So, but this one friend I have, her husband, her daddy was a Crump man, Rudolph Jones Sr.
Mm-hmm.
See, I worked with him down on the riverfront. Mm-hmm. And his daughter's a wonderful woman. I know her very well. We worked together on the Bluff Walk. So she told me one day, you know, they had been, they just, she felt kind of bad when people started running down Crump. But, you know, I don't know. And I learned too, you know, that's why I like the league, I guess. I couldn't always be certain that a person in office was being objective. You don't know where they're coming from. And they've got so much power, so much pressure put on them from groups competing for the power that I think, you know, the league is an answer to everything, because we learned you got to, like a friend of mine who taught journalism for so long, she says, I have to keep telling these students to check it out. Even if your mother said it, check it out yourself. Well, see, people don't do that.
What sort of impact do you think that the league had on politics?
Well, it's a little better now than it was way back. But, and of course, league members, all except the board members, you know, they're out there working in the politics, in everything.
Yeah.
And so I'm sure they've had an impact. They've helped get women elected.
Yeah.
And they've helped bring women's issues to the surface.
Yeah.
So I even when I learned about Catholics for Free Choice, I thought, whoopee. Not that I was past the age of worrying about getting pregnant, but I thought, there's got to be an end to this control of women's reproductive rights, reproduction. And now I see all these women's groups who are so well-educated, and they're so knowledgeable about all of these subjects. I think some of them go too far, but, I applaud them, because the sexist issues are as bad as the black-white issues.
Well, I'm going to stop it so we can go over the names, so I have the correct spellings, and then if she's late, then we can talk.